Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Tuesday here, as I originally woke up from my nap and thought today was Wednesday. But anyways, it's the Tuesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. He's Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, hey, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. And just especially today, anybody who emails us while we're live during the podcast, we'll get a special reply from Mr. Fantasy. So again, that's sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. So any, you know, anything else you need or want, hey, get on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, Wednesdays and Saturdays, the new blogs go up. So look for one of those tomorrow morning. But hey, you never know when other content might pop up there. You should be checking it out on time. While you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and click that link, gets you over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, we would appreciate that. Also, the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at.
Dan, the man is three. Not knowing.
So, you know, my fan planet just ended, it was a 130 points, so it wasn't great, but it didn't totally suck like some days. Obviously, in that free roll, it was nowhere close to winning money because you just about need 200 points to come out with anything. So, hopefully tonight, this will be my 200-point lineup. So, here I go. Pitching-wise, I decided I'm going with Marco Estrada of the Blue Jays tonight. He cost me $7,600. I think he's a really good bet. He's pitching against Tampa Bay, who's been just struggling to score runs. So now, of course, that I'm going with Estrada, they'll put up double digits tonight. So, Tampa Bay, you're lucky. You're welcome for breaking out of your slump. I ended up with a couple Cubs in my lineup. Started out with the first one at catcher. I got Victor Caratini for $2,200. He's hitting fifth in the Cub lineup tonight. Catching is really where I try to find my value guys, because it's catcher. And like last night I spent on Buster Posey and he got me a whopping 3 points. So I just kind of decided I'll save money here and take some shots with these guys. And, you know, the Cubs are playing a bad Reds team. So they got a chance to put up some runs. So, you know, $2,200, I can take the risk. First base, I'm going with Josh Bell of the Pirates for $3,300. Second base, oddly, I stayed in that same game, but I'm on with a Milwaukee player this time. I'm going with Neil Walker, hitting six Brewers. He cost me $3,100. Back to the Cubs here at third base. I'm paying the money for Chris Bryant tonight, $4,300. He's hitting third in the Cubs lineup. He's also hitting over 600 in his last seven games. I know the power really isn't there, but I'm going to take a guy who's going to go almost 3 for 4 every night, regardless of what the hits are. So I'm paying for Chris Bryant tonight. Shortstop, I'm going with Jorge Polanco of the Minnesota Twins. Cost me $2,800, and he's hitting eighth in their lineup tonight. My outfield, I actually have a second Brewer. I'm going back to Ryan Braun, who's hitting third for the Brewers tonight. Just kind of playing a hot hand there. I'm hoping he can keep it up. The only guy who's not officially in my lineup in my outfield here is Lorenzo Cain. He cost me $4,000, but the Royals are playing in Oakland, so I'm taking a chance that Cain is going to be in the lineup because this little tournament here will probably be started by the time those lineups come out. And then I wrap my lineup up with Mikey Matuk of the Detroit Tigers. He's hitting second. He cost me $3,300. So the quick review here, Marco Estrada pitching, Victor Caratini catching, Josh Bell at first, Neil Walker at second, Chris Bryant at third, Jorge Polanco at short, and then the outfield is Ryan Braun, Lorenzo Cain, and Mikey Matuk. This, of course, is for the – today it's back to 7:05, the free roll that FanDuel is running, the four toughest ticket presented by Ford. So you have just a little under 25 minutes to get your lineup in for that. I didn't see any big time rain in the forecast or anything. You should be okay. Did you get your lineup submitted, Dan?
Yes, I did. And yesterday's lineup actually hit 163.1 points.
It is.
I remember their salary, Richard, you owe me a dollar now.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. I went a little bit different route. I spent a little bit more money on pitcher with Danny Salazar. I'm hoping his K's are up tonight, like they've been in the level of earned runs there too. But then I went to Milwaukee with Pena. I spent some money at first base on Rizzo, so this kind of made things a little bit difficult. So we'll see how it goes. When I went with the same guy who did at second with Neil Walker, I'm hoping Anthony Rendon has a decent day tonight, as well as Didi Gregorius. And then in the outfield, I feel like it's been dropping every single day. But yet I continue to pick him, of course, with his cost, with Marcelo Zuna. And then I figured it was today. It's got to be 100 pence kind of night. And I was thoroughly shocked. I didn't even realize I must have missed this one. But Jay Bruce in Cleveland. He must have gone over the next year. Yeah. Big Jack, did you realize Jay Bruce is in Cleveland? I forgot.
Oh. I didn't hear a word you said. It sounded like you were in Cleveland. But yeah, I did know that Jay Bruce is in Cleveland. I knew about the trade. So, oh, see, Dan went into the wind tunnel and he dropped off. But yeah, he was talking. I think it was the end of last week or so. Jay Bruce got shipped off by the Mets to Cleveland. There we go. We got Dan back. Let's bring him in. See if he's out of the wind now. All right. Yeah, I know Jay Bruce went over to Cleveland there. So. The lineup kind of started to be let me double check and see if I can actually find out for sure here. But I wanted to say it was last week or last something like that. It was very recent. Yeah, August 9th.
That one just kind of slipped through the cracks, then.
The same day they put Michael Brantley on the DL.
Well, that would make sense. So he'll be on the 10-day that turns into, like, 60 days?
Oh, who knows? You know, nowadays with these 10, you know, these 10-day things, one of those scares, you just never know. Just kind of how things go. So we'll have to see. I'm looking here, Dan. I'm disappointed I didn't find this article before the podcast because there's actually an article on the Mickey Mouse website. Let me give this guy credit. His name's Sam Miller, and I'll post it on the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. So it'll go out to the Twitter feed and stuff. But it says why MLB games are 5 minutes longer this season. And I'm looking to see if actually that, well, see, what's funny is that's what I'm looking to see if that's what he mentions it on. So I just want to see how that's working. You know, the weird part is you and I are still the only two guys who seem to realize that that's why games run longer now, is because of the stupid way they do the manager's challenges, you know, with the, well, you know, you get up on the top step and then you stand there and it's like, okay, well, no, we're going to review it. We're not going to review it, blah, blah, blah. He breaks down a few reasons here. There are more plate appearances per game. He says that adds about an average of 1 minute, 20 seconds per game. There are more pitches thrown per plate appearance, which makes sense because pitchers can't throw strikes, but that only accounts for about 45 seconds. There are more plate appearances. Oh, okay. With more runners on base, that's just 7 seconds. And then more pitching changes would add 2 minutes and 20 seconds per change. So, yeah, oddly it looks like he goes with everything but instant replay, because his last fact here is, where's the title there? Defense are taking more time between pitches. So there's good old Sam Miller's reasoning on why baseball games take so long. He left out, of course, the most important point, which Dan and I both know is replay, but I will set it up for didn't take a look at it, see if you agree or disagree or how it works out. But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. Obviously, you know, you and I have over time, and I don't know, Dan, why are we the only two guys who can see this?
Because everyone else is blind. I mean, it should technically only be 4 minutes and 48 seconds. There's 12 seconds for game shakeup per intentional walk, right?
Yes. And the weird part is, like, he doesn't even have a replay breakdown in his review. So it's just kind of like, okay, where's, you know, you can't tell me replay isn't taken longer.
Well, I mean, that's fairly easy to kind of take a look at a team with young players like the Cubs and take a handful of games, eliminate the use of instant replay, and talk about how it, you know, because more pitches. Well, you know, that was the whole reason Kyle Schwarber would be at the top of the order, because he takes more pitches. But guys like Javi Baez, Anderson Russell, I mean, we've seen this a lot with the Cubs lately, where they take a lot of pitches, a lot of soft balls. But, you know, the other part of it is, too, like you said, I mean, even watching Quintana last night, it was a little irritating in the second inning. I mean, getting to a 3-2 count one seemed like everybody, and the bases were loaded. And then, of course, all of a sudden, you get a walk, or you're giving guys pitches that they know they have to swing at, and you're getting a lot of foul balls. But that's normal, quote, pace of play. Like you said, no one wants to talk about the instant replay being the biggest addition of time and biggest flaw in Major League Baseball right now.
I mean, I guess that I'm just kind of realizing that it's since their, you know, that is their pet, you know, their little pet project play, that they don't want to, you know, say bad things about it. But yeah, I mean, I sit there and watched, you know, the, you know, not only the most blatant, obvious replay take forever, and then they still get the call wrong. And it's like, so you've got all this stuff in place, and you can't get it right. Okay, great. That's fantastic. Let's figure something out.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even go as far as saying they've got it wrong, because they technically didn't do. But they've been very stingy with it, and they're not overturning, you know, stuff that the naked eye and three replays. They don't need all six different views. 9 out of 10 times, there's 3 replays shown on broadcast television, as well as the big boards in the stadium, where everyone has seen that the guy is, you know, let's just go with clearly safe, and it's not overturned. So it's almost coming to the point, like, what the hell is the point of the instant replay? And not only that, after that, it's up to the umpire to decide whether they're going to do the challenge or not. So, I mean, basically the way it's set up is any play that is deemed challengeable basically gets challenged. But why do you even have the rule in place? Why not, again, like we talked about at the beginning of the season, moving up to last year, why not collect the NHL? Look, there's 30 teams. Figure have 15 screens in one room. Yeah, 15, because there might be that day when you have all 15, but I doubt it. And you put you station that many umpires and have, boardroom specific. None of this rotating. I don't know. I think it should be an instant replay referee. And then umpires on the field. That's your job on the field is your job on the field. Your job in the box is the box. Or, in the studio is in the studio. What's the reason for rotating?
Yeah, I've never understood the idea. I mean, I get, okay, you want to rotate guys now because, you're using the regular umpires, but I mean, I honestly think they just need to hire, like the NFL does, use former referees, bring them back and make them replay guys. Maybe you can't do that with umpires because a lot of them stay a whole, a lot longer, but maybe this could also be a way to get an influx of new, younger umpires on the field. You move some of these guys who've been longtime veterans into a replay booth, like you said, New York or wherever they want to set it up. And here you go. You guys are working. If something goes on, you buzz the home plate umpire. Hey, this has got to be changed. No problem.
Yeah, or whatever the crew is for the night. I mean, not only that, you can also get it as, and I'm not saying that they're in the booth, that's their only job. They can't ever go on the field. So like you said, it could be a way, maybe you leave the experienced guys on the field. And this gives the younger, I don't want to say younger, but newer umpires a chance to qualify better for the position. Let's be honest, how many times do we, especially with the Cubs and a lot of the national games, we see the same referees, not the same guys. And sometimes I'm like, is Joe West referee every game? How did he do two games in a night? He's in three places at one time, it seems like. But you put guys in the booth for a year, 2 years, maybe even three, and they're stuck there watching an entire game, one game every day. I mean, they're going to pick up a lot of knowledge. They're going to, I think they already, a lot of them would already know. But then, maybe a year or two in the booth, the next year, if, they can be put on the field. And if you want to rotate from year to year, I think that would be more preferable than, having guys on the field. Week one and then in the booth week two. Sometimes I think the stability for someone in the booth might, be a little bit better. I think you should be having guys on the road. Trying to keep the longevity. I think you find longevity and then you have reliable guys. You can put a camera in the room or just above their camera. They can buzz the crew chief for, we can even get to the point where they take over the broadcast for 30 seconds, not even 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's so much easier. just a simple way to speed up the game, and for whatever reason, they tweak replay, obviously, from this year to last year, but it still sucks. it's just kind of like, okay, maybe we could fix it the right way now. And it seems so obvious. And I almost wonder if they stay away from it because they'd be afraid people are saying, you're just copying the NFL. Well, if it works, use it because you want to get stuff right and move the game along. But I don't know. It seems dumb.
Yeah, I don't know if it's coming in at all or not. I mean, it's just, to me, I think, like, the most logical thing that, again, we don't know about the NHL or NBA. I've looked into the NFL, and I mean, I'm not going to pay $100 so I can watch the replay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I'm going to pay $100, I mean, I better, you know, get off and be able to stream all of the games every Sunday from my laptop, my tablet, your computer. You know what I mean? I don't want to pay $100 to watch every Sunday game. You know, I would mainly be watching the Vikings, but I'm not looking to watch the Vikings Monday night after I get home from work. So, I mean, you know, that app is kind of, unless you have a job, you know, it really makes worth it. Unless you're that tired of a fan that you're actually watching the replays, you know, more power to you. But, you know, the technology is there. You're telling me it's going to cost that, not cost, that Major League Baseball doesn't have the money inside MLB studios or, you know, the main office in New York.
It's just so weird. I understand so little about what they're trying to do with this. You know, even like the changes for this year, I was like, really, this is what you came up with? You know, it's like, you know, last year, I mean, the manager actually had to go out on the field. It was kind of like, okay, well, let's go out here and stall and kill some time and, you know, all this crap before they decided they were going to review it or not. Now at least he doesn't have to come out of the dugout, but it's still just ridiculous.
You know, well, I mean, even come next year with the pitch clock, you know, let's say, you know, they're and I forget if they're going to limit the amount of visits to the mound. Okay, well, Bryce Harper's coming up to the mound, and, you know, whoever you want to put behind him, but we don't really want to pitch to Bryce Harper, but we want to establish the game plan, and we don't want to take, you know, waste the trip to the mound to talk to our pitcher, you know, i.e. Steven Strasburg, you know, Gio, or, you know, someone of that sort. No, well, I guess that would be on the same team, but you know where I'm getting at. Someone from the opposite team of Bryce Harper. Let's go with the Cubs and Joe Maddon. It's, you know, Mike Montgomery on the mound. You know, we can either go with the intentional walk, save us 12 seconds, or we can go with the pitch clock, let him stand there, and then wait the 20, 30 seconds while we devise our plan and, you know, throw it out there through signals as to what we're going to do once we intentionally walk Bryce Harper. And then we didn't waste the mound visit, and now we didn't intentionally walk. Yeah, we may have wasted, you know, 100, you know, what is it, 60, 20, you get 20, 40, 60, 80 seconds on the clock. This is the time of the game. Now we developed our plans. I mean, we're doing all these things, but there's ways around everything. You know, I'm sure Joe Ben, I'll send that to him, they could use that one next year. But, you know what I mean? It's like any little thing that they come up with, you and I can essentially come up with ways around it. And the things that they're saving time on are so insignificant, it really doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I'm so lost on, you know, what they seem to think are ways to, you know, to speed this up. I don't understand the process. It's like, oh, but you think this is, you know, like the intentional walk thing was just incredibly stupid. There's, you know, one intentional walk every two or three games. So how much did that? Okay, yeah, you did save some time, but, you know, how much? It was like, yeah, okay. Thanks for playing. yeah, you know, it's starting to seem akin to where we're just kind of, you know, beating a dead horse. So.
No, and not only that, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, well, this summer, Bud Selig went into the Hall of Fame. And I'm sure that's not what, now I can't even think of his name off the top of my head. I keep wanting to say Adam Silver. But, you know, I'm sure that's not what he's thinking about. But when it comes to it, is he going to get into the Hall of Fame for shedding, you know, 30 seconds off every game? Or not even every game, but for 12 seconds out of a handful of games, and then by putting a pitching clock in for 20 seconds, how did that improve the overall play or experience of a Major League Baseball game?
Yeah, I, you know, the sad part is I think just about every commissioner ends up in the Hall of Fame one way or the other. You know, I mean, they put Bug Selig in, and what did he really do, you know?
Well, he, when I get into conspiracies.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the big thing they always give him credit for is the wild.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just kind of like, well, great, you know, who cares?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I get it. You know, just like with the country that we live in, every country in the world, there's politics. That, you know, stuff you got to go through the process. But, I mean, you know, he's going to use his essentially executive order to put in a pitching clock next year. Well, you know, what's like the kids say today, DFB, big deal. I mean, you want to get aggressive. Make some actual changes. Do something to actually make the game better. Like what? Well, Big Jack, I definitely have ideas, but, you know, do we need to rehash them every time we talk about them? Shorten the season by 8 games, extend the wild card for another game, make it a 5-game series between 2 teams after one team gets eliminated in 1-card wild card game. Hey, but, you know, maybe that's a little too progressive.
Yeah, it, you know, it's one of those, you know, one of those goofy, you know, goofy situations where it's like they want to make changes, but don't want to make any real changes.
Well, I guess that's the point that I'm trying to make, and you just helped me make it even better, is all the changes that have been made to make the game better, speed up the game, whatever you want to say, over the last couple of years. What has really changed? But nothing. I mean, the best thing, not the best thing, but one of the biggest changes has been the addition of instant replay. I just don't understand what's taking so long to completely get it right and quit wasting everyone's time.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take that long. But other than that, what has changed about the game? Oh, I know. We have exit velocity now. The players are being taught to hit the ball on the underside. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Oh, and strikeouts don't matter, and neither does your ERA. But more is the
Yeah,
game.
You know, I'm the... Yeah, the biggest... I, you know, in reality, I mean, the biggest changes to baseball have really been the way sabermetrics have made things that used to be important in the game unimportant. You know, those are the real things, because, you know, now you hear, you know, garbage like launch angle and exit velocity, and you know this is all garbage, because as a hitter you can't really project that stuff. But, you know, they sure want to make it seem like you can.
No, I mean,
so,
they're... I think it's a cool thing when you're watching a game and you're at home and Aaron Judge or Kyle Schwarber knocks one completely out of the park. Well, you know, I mean, that guy will park it. Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing. On the flip side of it, when the pitcher gets whacked in the head Arizona. I don't know. But regardless, when the young pitcher gets whacked in the head by a ball coming at them, it's kind of an interesting stat to, you know, kind of put you really into that, to where you can kind of go, wow, you know, he didn't just get hit with a baseball. He got hit with a baseball coming at him at 100 foot miles an hour, you know, almost as fast as he threw it at them. Yeah, that kind of adds to the game while you're watching. As far as, like you said, as far as stats go or projections or anything like that, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't mean anything. And anytime a player is asked about it, they just kind of shrug their shoulders because, you know, they play the game, they love the game. They're not gonna knock all those baseball nerds. But they're just, you know, when you get a guy that's no longer playing, they get asked about it. And that's what I love about listening to Saturday morning versus the line, Chicago Cubs, White Sox, and State Reporter, is he'll ask players. And they're like, well, it doesn't really mean anything. You know, these are guys that are out of the game,
Sitting
at home. You know, and they're like, if they had the velocity of my day, it wouldn't have changed anything. It wouldn't do anything.
It's humorous. You know, listening to this garbage, you know, as, you know, someone who played and has watched the game for a long time, you know, you sit there and it's almost frustrating because you realize that they're talking about something that is absolutely unimportant to, you know, the game of baseball. And how funny is it now that Chris Bryant, who's actually been a guy who's admitted to working on his launch angle, is now hitting better because he's got an injured finger and he actually has to concentrate on what he's doing at the plate and take the ball the other way and basically not try to homer every time he steps up there. And all of a sudden, you know, like I said, he's hitting 600, over 600 in his last seven games. So it's weird how, you know, that kind of worked out. And, you know, people seem to forget that, you know, if you're batting and you move that guy from second to third and the next guy drives him in, while you don't get credit for anything except an out, your team just scored a run. If you win by one run, you may have had something to do with your team winning. You know, man, that used to be the object of the game, not personal stats and what one guy did. The object used to be to win the baseball game. But now it seems like winning has kind of fallen second place to, ooh, did you see this guy hit that? Or look at this guy's war. Or, you know, sabermetrically, you know, the route he took didn't have very good accuracy, but, you know, who cares? He caught the damn ball. So.
Well, you know, maybe we can make that seem something again if we give hitters an assist. We can advance the ball. You know, you do a sacrifice bunt. Move a guy over to second, and that guy's scoring
against this. Yeah. But, you know, the saddest part is that, Dan, if you had these guys to sacrifice bunt, they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, kind of, I've seen so many guys who should be able to get a bunt down in situations go up there and look like complete jackasses. You know, and I don't know if it's the fact that, you know, I know they work on it in the exhibition season, but maybe guys forget that occasionally you might have to do it in the regular season, and they either don't work on it or they just don't care because they want to hit home runs. And, yeah, it's bunting and hitting behind the runners and even hitting the other way to some extent are just all kind of, you know, they're lost arts now in baseball, but these are ways you win games. You know, you can't go out and outbug everybody every time. But according to sabermetrics, you can, and this is how teams are being built.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, the way they're being trained is you just hit the ball basically the same way every time, and that's why, you know, the shift and the super shift have become prominent in the game. I mean, even last night, Jason Hayward was up to bat. They really didn't give you a pan of where the Jason Hayward took one right up the middle, and I'm like, ooh, that's a great hit. That's going right up the middle. But they apparently had a shift going on because the shortstop was not only able to get to the ball, he was able to get it in between the legs. And a normal situation in any game, that shortstop either would have missed it by running, you know, going right under his glove while running towards it or diving and missing it. But where it was hit, right, you know, right behind second base, you know, the shortstop was in perfect position to just kind of squat down, scoop it up, and toss to first. You know,
the fact that these guys play shift, part of the reason why we have guys like Kyle Schwarber who can't hit 200, Joey Gallo got a boatload of home runs, but I think he's hitting about 200, because if he's not hitting a home run, he's not doing anything else. And, you know, 30 home runs over 600 at bats with, you know, 200 strikeouts and a 200 average doesn't really equate to a quality player to me, but in this heck of baseball, it is. He's a great guy to have, apparently.
Well, and not only that, Big Jack, if they didn't remake the baseball team this season, would he even have that many home runs?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you wonder how he would do if they had a normal baseball in play. You know, maybe next year they'll go back to it. And I kind of was chuckling today because I heard somebody defending the fact that, you know, the baseball is different from shipment to shipment they get. Well, obviously the one thing that's in common this year is it flies out of the park. So, yeah, you know, you can say whatever you want, and, you know, it's but yeah, it's, you know, just one of those things. You know, the baseball wanted home runs this year, they got them. So there you go. You know, that's just kind of how this, you know, how it goes. And, you know, Dan, I made that same stupid mistake that I just seem to make every year. I was just kind of cruising the web, and, you know, obviously we have our fantasy football draft coming up soon. So I'm starting to look into, you know, some things slowly but surely, kind of get the idea of what's going on. And dumbass me saw the article for sleepers. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm going to have to go and see if I can find a sleeper. So I crack open this article and I'm reading through it. And obviously these are sleepers for an 8 or 10 team league, because in our 20 team league, these guys aren't sleepers and they're all going to be drafted. So, you know, if there's a fantasy football guy out there, please do a little more research and find some actual sleepers. You know, and like when you post a guy who's a starting wide receiver on an NFL team, even if he's on a bad NFL team, he's really not a sleeper because he's a starter. So we all know who he is. Even the guys in the 8 and 10 team leagues, the newbies who are just starting fantasy football, they know who's starting for every team by looking at a depth chart. So, you know, I understand you've got deadlines and you got to get your articles out, and maybe your editor wants this or your website wants that, but you got to work just a tad harder so you can find some actual sleepers and, you know, some guys who may actually pay dividends for, you know, the guys like Dan and I and Mr. Fantasy and all the people who join us in our 20 team league, where you really need to find sleepers late in the draft. So yeah, come on and do a little work, guys. Don't be lazy. You know, but I'm a sucker, Dan. I fall for it every time. You know, even if the article says like deep sleepers, I'm thinking, oh yeah, okay, cool. This guy did some research. He went, no, yeah, okay, whatever. So, you know, I'm like, no, they got me again. So, I just don't get it. I don't know why I fall for it, Dan. I guess I'm just so excited to get the draft going. And, you know, I want to be the guy who finds that one guy. And then I can trade him to Mr. Fantasy and rip him off. And yeah, you know, like I know I saw one of them. I saw the guy has Joe Mixon is a big time sleeper, Dan. He's the running back the Bengals drafted that everybody is talking about how he should start ever since they've drafted him. So I don't understand how even the worst fantasy player in your league doesn't know who Joe Mixon is. You know, besides the fact that I believe you can, I think you can still find the video of him online of punching some girl in the face. So maybe you know about him that way, but, you know, it's just kind of like, really? This guy you've been saying you've been, who's going to start for them since they drafted him is a sleeper. Hmm. Okay, thank you. Next. I think, Dan, I think you should draft Shane Drone as a sleeper this year.
Oh, I had my mic up. I yelled it like six times.
So, jeez. So, yeah. I just, the weird part is, I don't know if you... Yeah, he's a big-time sleeper. Did you, by any chance, catch it? I think it might still be going on. The Mickey Mouse Network did 24 hours of fantasy football.
No, but, you know, this morning when I tuned in to Mike and Mike, because our local was talking about nothing but Kyle Long getting kicked out of practice, I figured I'd switch on over to Mike and Mike. And I did hear that. You're, you know, blah, blah, listening or watching 24 hours of fantasy football. Mike and Mike get on, and oddly, they were talking about not Kyle Long, but guys getting kicked out of practice.
Oh.
So it, for me, it was a man, it was a mankind, man cow kind of morning this morning. I couldn't deal with it.
He's still on the radio?
Yeah, apparently on the loop.
Oh, okay. I had no clue. So I honestly thought he had maybe passed away, but you know, I guess not. So. I caught the end of one of the shows. They were just, like, revealing their team names. So I didn't see any of the actual drafting or anything like that done. But I did catch an article, and I think it's just a little – people being a little too oversensitive. They did a skit for their auction draft, where they literally had an auctioneer up front, and he had players' heads on a stick. So, of course, when the first African-American player came up, Dan, you know, every self-righteous person in America with a Twitter account got on there and said, oh, well, this is a slave auction. Obviously, Dan, these people have never been to an actual live auction draft. Because in the bigger leagues, this is how it's done. You know, you have to know what player is going up on the board. In most cases, they'll use a projector and put the player's picture up there like that. But it's ran very much like an auction. You know, just like you would see in Storage Wars or any of those other type of shows. You got the guy up there taking bids right and left and asking for more money out of people like they always do. It's got nothing to do with color. It's got nothing to do with race or slaves or ownership or anything to do like that. It just drives me nuts, Dan, when they try to turn it into this because it's fantasy sports. They're not making statements about anything political, absolutely nothing like that. It's just the way you need to do it when you're in a large fantasy draft room that's not online because you need to be able to see and hear everything. You know, Dan, imagine our fantasy draft group if we had 20 owners together trying to do our auction draft all in one league.
You can't have 20 guys yelling.
Right.
Well,
so you need guy up there running it, you know.
Well, and, you know, and the thing I find funny is what you say when you said the first African-American player to go up to be, you know, put up for auction. I would think would be the very first guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see who went first. The article I ended up finding on it, they had a pic. The guy was holding a picture of Odell Beckham. You know, he was the guy, the one example they were using. But yeah, just depending, you know, I mean, yeah, you would think David Johnson would probably be the first guy to be auctioned off. You know, David Johnson, Antonio Brown, somebody like that. And, you know, I mean, I know I'm not, we're not breaking any news here, Dan, but I believe the majority of the players in the NFL are African-American now. And especially at the skill positions, you know, running back, wide receiver, tight end, where obviously those are the guys you're going to be drafting. So you don't have much of a choice. And again, if you were just to announce the player's name, plenty of guys aren't paying attention right away, and they're going to forget who's up for bid, and you're going to have to repeat yourself 8,000 times. This happens when I get together with Mr. Fantasy for our drafts, and it's not even an auction draft. Guys will just forget who've been drafted, and a round later, somebody's picking a guy who's already been gone. So imagine with, you know, trying to do an auction draft with no organization. I get that when you see it, you could turn it into whatever you wanted it to. And you could say, oh, yeah, it's a slave auction because it's a white auctioneer holding up a picture of a African-American man. I get it. But, you know, there are times you just have to have more common sense and not try to race bait everything when it comes to this. And the Mickey Mouse Network actually had to issue an apology, Dan, for having an auction draft skit. And it was just like, really, you know, obviously it's people who've never played fantasy football. Because they just have zero clue on what's going on and how it would need to be organized. And, you know, it was just like, give me a break. And I was really waiting for the afternoon idiots on our local station to jump all over it because that's just the thing they like to talk about. They actually spend less and less time talking about sports, and they're very slowly almost kind of attempting to make their show a political sports format. But luckily for me, I think I turned it off before that story broke. So I'm sure they'll talk about it for an hour or two tomorrow when I end up having them on. So I, you know, there's enough going on in the world right now that we don't need to turn everything into this.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing I, you know, while we're rambling on, I found hilarious that with Jason Goff, you know, when he was a mid-morning guy, I forget who he was with, but they had a pretty solid show. You know, you really got, you know, Monday mornings, you heard a little bit more about the weekend than you wanted to hear. But the other day I've heard him with, you know, the judgmental guy, you know, who took over, and he's completely 180. He's turned into a, you know, caller insulting regular guy on the show. One of the reasons I don't enjoy listening to them that much. And I was very surprised that, you know, he can turn into a, basically a pompous ass, like a handful of them on that station.
Yeah, he oddly slid. He replaced Terry Bors, who retired after, you know, God only knows how many years of just being a complete tool on the radio, you know, treating people like crap and all that kind of stuff. And I was wondering how the show was going to go because, like you, when Goff was on with, I think it was Jason Spiegel in the, in the, that mid morning slot, they had a decent little show going and it wasn't terrible to listen to. And now the guy they replaced Goff with, it's still a pretty decent show. But yeah, now, you know, they follow it up. It's Goff and Bernstein and Goff. Now that Terry Bors is gone and he basically just slid right into the Terry Bors role, and they picked up the show exactly how it was before, where, you know, if you call in, you're immediately insulted. They don't want to listen to your point. They just want to rip you. So it doesn't matter what you say or what you're trying to get across. All that's going to happen is they are going to drill you right and left and make fun of you.
Well, and I feel like it's a bait if they bait them in like that.
Yeah. You know, and I'm sure, you know, their callers are screened like everybody else. So, their guy is, probably setting them up for the guys they need to, be calling in or be doing, sending the right guys there so they can make fun of them. And I know, people get on and they attempt to make valid points and it just doesn't really happen. And then, hey, here comes. Okay, well, now it's time to make fun of the guy. And most of the time they just cut him off and, all that other stuff. So, it's to the point where it's difficult to listen to. And I wonder if, that's another one of those things. I've always wondered if it's just Chicago centric or, if every market has that a-hole team that just, this is kind of their job. And I think I've asked it, here before. I don't understand why you would call or, oddly, they don't read too many tweets because it's harder to make fun of those. But yeah, I don't understand why you would call the show. I mean, I guess you just get frustrated and you want to be the guy who puts them in their place, but they're never going to let you do that.
Nope, because you get cut off.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of, but yeah, like I said, that's one of those things I just wonder, in every, major sports town like that, is there just that, that one team of radio guys who are just, jerkwads, and it's their job to be jerkwads. But yeah, I don't know, it's one of those things, I guess someday maybe we'll find out. I know we don't treat people like that. I don't know. When you were interning, were you taught to treat people like that?
No, I was actually taught to treat them like they're your best friend, even if you've never talked to them in your life. But sadly, after 20 plus years in the industry, that guy was fired the very next summer.
So, because he was treating people like they were his best friend?
Yeah, he was too nice. Well, that and, the station I was on was a teeny bopper station, and he was far from it.
Yeah, it's always odd that, the teeny bopper stations are run by, like, old men. That's always kind of humorous. But, it's like, oh, well.
Well, technically it was supposed to be, the station for 20 somethings and then, but teenage to 20.
Well, yeah, what can you do? But it's just, just the fun stuff we get to deal with in the lovely Chicago, radio market. So, we'll have to see how, I always have a hope that it's going to get better, but, it rarely does, or if they try, it somehow manages to, to get beat down into something stupid or, that kind of fun stuff. But, again, it makes it hard. Yeah, I keep thinking, we wouldn't be as bad as some of those guys, but I don't know, maybe we would. I would probably lose it on some guy or, Mr. Fantasy would call in and I would end up swearing at him and we'd get fired. But, that's just kind of how it goes. So
he wouldn't call in.
He might if we were on the actual radio. The fact that we're just podcasting on the internet, I think he's above that, except for the couple hours we spend together on Sunday now. But yeah, if we were possibly, on an actual station, he would probably stop by and, want to be our friend again.
No, I think he tried to call us out.
So, well, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of reason to do that too, with the, you know, the way we are, but just kind of interesting. So, you know, I did see something, I don't know, that I found oddly humorous today. You know, I always try to catch intentional talk. I get a kick out of Kevin Millar. Chris Rose can be a tad overbearing at times. But, you know, they have their ballpark cams on all over the place. And oddly, you know, apparently, and I'm so out of the loop with this, but apparently there's a big WWE pay-per-view this weekend. I think it's in New York, obviously. And they had three of their heels on the field at Yankee Stadium, taking pictures with like Dellen Betances and Aaron Judge. And I just thought it was pretty interesting that they sent, let's just say, bad guys to do this photo op. Where are you surprised by that?
I don't think they quote have the line of demarcation anymore where you can separate the two. I think it's just all in the same. You know, it's so PG
Well, then the
now
other
that,
thing.
well, it's so PG now that the bad guys are likable characters.
Well, then, you know, the other thing that I just found incredibly hilarious is they bill the one guy, and I wish I could remember his freaking wrestling name. It's Big Something or Other. But they've always billed him as 7 feet tall. And they had him on the camera, the ballpark cam, standing next to Dellen Betances, who is listed at 6'8" in the Yankee guide, and he was taller than this 7-foot guy. And I mean, you and I both know from wrestling, you kind of stretch the truth on the numbers. But you know, it's just stuff like that that I always find kind of, you know, this guy's supposed to be a 7-footer, and here he is standing next to a legitimate 6'8" baseball player, and the baseball player is taller. Like, whoops, we kind of blew the facade there.
Yeah, but no one ever paid attention.
No, you know, like I said, it was just funny to me. But yeah, you know, it was just weird how well Betances, and then they had him on there with Aaron Judge, fit right in as WWE characters just because of their size. I didn't realize both of them were that big. All right, well, that's all the wrestling talk for today. Dan and I are going to go. Don't worry, though. We're coming back tomorrow at 5:30 to do this all again. You know what to do while we're away, though. SportsTimeRadio.com. You want to check out what's going on over there. Look for the new blog tomorrow morning. Follow the link over to the Facebook page. Give that a like. Don't forget the Twitter feed at SportsTimeRadio. You can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. As always, we really appreciate you listening to us live, but don't forget, you can get the podcast anytime you want at TuneIn.com.